Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello. Thank you very much for deciding that we need to be in your ears today and hopefully in your eyes as well at supertalk.tv. Yes, those of you who've known me for a long time are seeing something you've never seen before. I have bangs. I've already gotten like six different things. I saw you. Was that you? Did you?
Yeah, plus it's windy too. So.
And it's real windy, so my hair's all standing up. But the good news is you got to make a change every now and then. Got to take a different look when the person that you trust, who's just brilliant with hair, says, "Let's do this." Sometimes you just have to close your eyes and say, "Okay." Those of us who have glasses can't see what they're doing anyway, so it works out well. Thank you for your kindnesses. Hey, Lance, what's going on?
Oh, it's been a great week.
Do we have to do weather?
Well, we might need to. It's been North Mississippi under, at least until what I saw, they bumped that tornado advisory up to 6 a.m. The weather is obviously blowing through in the northern part of the state more so. Mm-hmm. According to radar now, you can tell if you walk outside, it's not a sky blue day. So
no.
I'm not sure about the rain anywhere else, but you had some severe thunderstorms moving northeast from the southwest through North Mississippi, almost kind of popped up in there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of tornadic advisories. And so just be careful, especially those that are in that northern part of the state. As far as where we are here in central Mississippi and then in the southern part, there could be a pop-up.
It's our turn soon.
Yeah, there could be a pop-up shower, things like that. But, again, the wind is what you got to worry about.
I was
about
up
right
all
now.
Night pushing this, not pushing to North Mississippi by any means, but trying to hold the whole thing off until I could get out of here. I'm sorry I can't accommodate your schedule, but I have a couple of things to do before I can get home and actually batten down all the hatches. So but,
yeah, we have that front. It's coming
with
through.
Solid
it's
front.
All red.
Yeah,
so it's not going
to
be a
something to be careful
wind.
About.
To don't be inside as that thing. I mean, don't be outside playing around as this front comes through. Again, you never know. The weather can change, but it looks like it's going to be dragging across the river in that kind of northeast fashion. And
I don't think this one's going to dissolve.
Yeah,
we talk all the time about how stuff almost gets to central Mississippi and then it sort of jumps and ends up somewhere else. But this time it looks pretty solid, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, and heavy red in the mix as far as thunderstorm and pop-ups. And really all over the state. It looks like even Starkville. I looked for the baseball games, obviously, to see
what you're doing.
Well, we knew that Ole Miss had moved theirs back to six. Maybe they can get that in. It
maybe
looks like it could clear up a little up in that way. As far as Starkville, as of early this morning, I had not seen that they had stated a time. Their NOAA weather forecast was not as probable later in the evening. So, again, it's kind of all over the place right now. And worth paying attention.
Be like
worth
that.
Paying attention to.
So that's what we want y'all to do is pay attention.
Exactly. I'm not a meteorologist, but I can tell you, I'd be keeping my eye on this thing.
As a famous weather forecaster used to say, I'm not a meteorologist, but I do read what they tell me.
I can read really well.
And here it is.
From the from what we can see. But it may be one of those things. I've enjoyed the wind. It's cool.
It's fun.
The day is not hot.
At the moment, it's just great.
So if you're going to be outside, keep your eyes peeled on the limbs and things above you if there's no rain. I think that probably, for me, just kind of being out and about the last 24 hours, those limbs, they're still up there. And there's a lot of them that are brittle. And I've just seen a lot fall.
I park in my driveway now. Because there's no trees to fall on my car there.
Yeah, so
if the trees come up that would actually land that far, my house is gone. So It's not. We just have to hope that doesn't happen.
I know the
because you never know. You have to be prepared, but you can't.
Yeah.
Change.
Well,
you know. You
and
can't
I've enjoyed getting
control
out.
Things.
Yeah. Everything's starting to grow a little bit.
Everything
grass.
Is.
What if you have real grass, it doesn't have flowers coming out of it. It's just grass.
But some people,
yeah, some people like me, we have a little bit of the flower mix coming through.
The pollinators are happy to have that little blue Amazonia in bloom, the little chickweed with the little white flowers. Those
I've
are all out there right
everywhere.
Now.
The carpenter bees are out. They're looking for your wood to eat.
Which is why we tell you, of course, in November that if you've got trellises and lawn furniture, you should be securing them, painting them, taking care of them. Because, yeah, the carpenter bees will get there before you know it and make holes through everything.
They are out and they're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, saw
really
three
are.
Or four swarming the day before yesterday, and I was like, uh-oh, here they come.
Well, it's been so warm that I actually had one red wasp approach me this week and say, is it really only March?
Yeah, he's not quite awake yet.
Like, wait a minute.
A little slow. But, yeah, he can almost talk to him right now. But
yeah, later on I'm running the other direction.
Give him until June. And yeah,
everybody has something, don't they?
Yeah.
I have a friend who is horrified of grasshoppers. This woman, she's not a diva living in an apartment on the 12th floor. Okay. She's an actual
she's
person.
She's not a fisherwoman, apparently, though.
No. But she's not a fisherwoman either. Mine is red wasps.
I'm not a fan of them.
I have been assaulted by them on too many occasions. They get not only all my respect, but sometimes other things from me.
I'm going to give people a warning here. If you've had like a garbage can or something that's been outside for the winter,
ooh,
and you've had cardboard and things like that in it, or you've
good
thrown
idea.
Scraps of wood or maybe shingles that have stacked up in there, I guarantee
good
you
idea.
That the wasps love that. And if you pull back three or four layers, you're going to see 200-300 of them in there that are yellow.
Yes.
It's the weirdest thing ever. They're almost albino at that
point. Almost.
Because the sun hasn't touched them. But
it's such a safe place for them to lay eggs and
so
carry on.
So be careful because they will be in there before you know it.
You be careful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
As we get out turning over these things that we haven't all winter and we're going, oh, well, let's grow stuff. There may be some critters that have decided to hang out with you.
We have been, for years, of course, we have known about the chant basically of the Postal Service that, you know, neither wind nor rain in this particular case. And Paula's headed for work. She says, just like the mail, got to go.
The dogs need
Paula today. She's got to go.
They need their hairdos.
So good morning. Y'all be careful out there.
I'm sure she puts a bow in a bunch of them. I've seen a lot of the little dogs. They get the nice frou-frou bow in there.
She is so patient.
Yeah.
You
have to be with dogs.
Anybody who can do that has to have
it's
a lot
the
of patience.
Owners of the dog
particularly.
That you have to be patient with. The dogs are just fine.
I can still remember the first time I ever saw a poodle done up with all the bows and whatnot. And I had known the dog, but I didn't recognize her. She suddenly looked like this
then
diva, you know.
A
whole nother thing. Hey, today is National Corn Dog Day, if you're looking for a recommendation for something to eat. And it lets me tell you a really fun thing. Every now and then, I don't know if y'all don't watch the same stuff I watch or pay attention to it, but every now and then I'll come upon someone whose bio includes recipe developer. And I always think, what does that mean? How big could that, aren't you on your way to something else? What are you trying to... Well, I've got my comeuppance. Sylvia Zipser-Schur was an American food, and she's known as an innovator. She wrote cookbooks. She developed recipes for Betty Crocker. She developed menus and, therefore, recipes for many restaurants, including the Four Seasons in Manhattan. I mean, you know, this is not my Betty Crocker. This is fancy Betty Crocker. But She invented something you may or may not like, which was Clamato juice, and you may or may not like the fact that she originated the corn dog for the company Pronto Pup, and I do remember that. 1939 is when they first started doing that. She popularized it, though, and brought it all out into the world. Interestingly enough, she was 92 years old when she passed away in 2009. And think of all the things. Perhaps her biggest accomplishment, if you don't, you know, you may not care for corn dogs. You may not think that Clamato needed to be invented. But on the other hand, she developed cran apple juice. And I don't know who of us has not had cran apple juice. So it's pretty interesting. Sylvia Schur, the origin of the – now, people will fight over this story, but she is the one who's given credit for it. pretty fun stuff. Good morning, Andrea. Oh, that's beautiful, the Tulipa clusiana. Those are so pretty. They just are just beautiful babies. Thank you for showing us that today.
Mike called and said he had a great idea. If you're making corn dogs, don't put the batter in a bowl. Put it in like a tall glass so you can dip it down in there.
Oh, very clever.
Makes a big difference, yeah. Mm-hmm, so, okay, yeah. So there's a little helpful hint. I can honestly confess
I have never made – I've eaten them, but I've never made one.
Is a Pronto Pup a corn dog? Uh-huh. It is. It's just a name of a
The way I remember it, it was like a little bitty one. You know, they were
– They were skinnier but longer, mm-hmm, yeah, the ones you get at the fair.
The ones at the fair, of course, are the weapons. They're large enough to be lightsabers in some cases. So why not? We're Americans. We innovate. All right? If you got cornbread and you got dogs, you're going to do something with it. And in fact, that's how we ended up with corn dogs.
And the hush puppy.
And also the hush puppy, yes. I wanted to tell y'all that next week we will be having some guests join us from the Garden Club of Jackson, and the pictures are just beautiful. I'm going to send them to you for us to use next week to promote their garden tour coming up in early April. That's really fun. It's really a beautiful time of year. This particular day is going to be a little tough, I think, all across the state, and we just have to see what it brings us. But today is a day to learn things, a day to figure out what you want to grow and how you want to grow it. I'm happy to tell you that the tomatoes I planted and protected for a couple of nights have taken off. They're doing great. I'm impressed with myself simply because I don't get everything done that I want to get done, but I did get this done, and that makes me very happy. Today on supertalk.tv, you'll be seeing things, among others, including mock orange, which is up there right at this particular moment. That is a pittosporum, and it is just beautiful. I've been really intrigued with my questions people have been giving me about flowering shrubs, because this is really the time of year when we start to notice. You know, even the holly, as soon as the berries fall off, it seems like we get a little bit of a flower there. Nandinas, the birds will strip those, and 2 weeks later they're already getting ready to make some more berries for the next year. The process in general takes a long time, whether it's pittosporum or sweet olive or something else. As soon as they bloom, if you want to prune them, you need to prune them, because they're going to begin putting on their material for the next bloom cycle, whether it's 6 months ahead or a year ahead, within a month of the time that they flower now. Shrubs that really have showy flowers are not all alike. The commonalities do bear noting, because we treat them similarly in many cases, particularly the way that we've pruned them. We're going to prune after flowering in most cases. But we also have evergreens that we want to stimulate growth in, and we can prune them now because they're going to bloom a little bit later on. So there's a couple of different choices. Depending on when they bloom, of course, is when you're going to determine when you prune. There are three kinds of shrubs. One is deciduous entirely. That means every leaf falls off of it as soon as the weather turns cold. You mean like flowering quince, drops all their leaves in the fall. But others are more semi-deciduous, and they drop their leaves as the season goes along, but they also are putting on new leaves all at the same time. Loropetalum is a good one for that. I noticed this week that they're blooming at my house, but they're also putting on leaves, and yet underneath them on the ground there's some leaves that fell off in that cold snap that we had a few weeks ago. The group that really does get our attention now are these that are busy blooming now. They have different looks, but keeping them going is really important. After you prune, you can prune if you need to as much as a third off of a shrub that's a flowering shrub, but hopefully you don't have to do that. Hopefully you prune a little bit each year to keep it in shape and get it like you want it to look, and then you fertilize. Yes, that's also when you put on some fresh mulch around the base of it. It's important that you do these things, because then you don't have to think about them again, first of all. And as gardeners, we've all got lists that we've lost somewhere of, oh, yeah, it's time to do this or that. Well, after the flowering shrubs bloom, it's time to do a little pruning on them, and it's time to do some fertilizing. Now, you'll notice I'm saying the ones that are in bloom now. If you got hydrangeas, they're not in bloom yet. They're barely putting on leaves. Don't go chopping on them. Okay? Okay. So many other things that we talk about when it comes to what makes a good shrub, though, has a lot to do with what they can tolerate. And in many cases, we are able to see them put up with more than we would expect. Cold weather and then warm weather and then cold weather again and then, oh yeah, warm weather for a month and then suddenly something else happens. That's why they're tough. And that's why we appreciate them so very, very much. On the text line, Ozark pink tomatoes. Ooh, pretty. They're getting started. Hey, Jeff, he'll be ready to transplant those. I'm going to tell you to lower your light just a little bit and give them a little bit more fertilizer. Your stems are kind of thin, and what you're going to see is that they're going to stretch in the next week if you don't do that. So raise them up a little closer to the light. Leave the light on for 10 hours a day. And give them a little bit of fertilizer. You'll be glad you did. I had some that stretched within this group of seeds that I had planted, and I've actually ended up putting them in deeper pots. So I now have probably another dozen tomato plants to do something with, just because I wanted to see if I could salvage them. And indeed, they turned out great. But it's a wonderful variety, Ozark Pink. Absolutely delicious. Good job. Thank you, Jeff, for showing them to us. Did you know that yesterday was Pi Day? It was also Einstein's birthday. Isn't that handy?
It's kind of convenient, right? Mm-hmm, yeah, I think they did that on purpose.
Maybe. Okay, sweet potato or boysenberry? What do you like?
I'm a sweet potato. I'm late to the game on sweet potato. But I never really wanted one as a kid, and then my dad kind of chastised me a bit once, and I was like, let me try one of these things. And then I was sold.
All those people that want pumpkin, you know, think that we who like sweet potato are a little bit Southern. Yes, we are. Thank you very much.
And there's a whole outfit, the Sweet Potato Queens.
They sure
celebrate.
Are. Some of my best friends. Delightful people. Delightful folks. Let's see now. Good question from Biloxi. This is our we haven't heard from Shaq Willie in a while. Is there anything I can do to keep from watering potted annuals sometimes every day when the weather's extremely dry? If I miss a day, they're wilted. Well, yes, first of all, you can pot them in slightly larger pots with richer soil that will hold that water. There's a problem that we get into if we're using just a mix that's a lightweight mix, for example, a potting soil. Sometimes it just dries out too fast, and sometimes the container is small and the plant's not so small, so that also can cause it to dry out. But you can make watering part of your routine every morning. You can also put down trays, put the pots in and pour the water in the tray and let them drink what they need. I mean, there's several different ways to do it. You can always move them into a little bit less full sun. That'll help slow down that water use too. But it's a good question, one that we'll consider as spring goes on. All right now. We're going to step aside. We got a lot to talk about. Please get you some coffee. Call Aunt Maud. Wake her up. Tell her it's time to turn on the radio and listen to the Garden Mama Show.
Strangest color blue. Flying is forgotten now. Thanks only of you.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
Hourly
was recorded at 3 a.m. in Keith Richards' bathroom. One of the worst versions. Which is why we play it, because everybody has to have one that's not so great, but what a cool, what a world. Oh, my goodness.
Talks about rain, too, and born in a hurricane.
Yeah.
And we're probably going to have some rain.
Sadly, we're going to have
a
lot of wind. I'd love to have some rain.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have, everyone will be safe. And then I did look up, I was trying to find an update on the Mississippi State. It looked like they're playing theirs from today tomorrow in a doubleheader. The first game tomorrow was scheduled at 1, so you got to double check your tickets. But that's what on the Mississippi State site it said March 16th, and that's tomorrow. But it doesn't have a March 15th anymore, so I think they've moved that. So if you're out in the garden and we're planning on going to a game today, double check, because you may get to spend more time in the garden.
Yeah, we would like for you to double check that.
It is on the website from Mississippi State, so double check. And so there's an update there.
Good, good, good. That's why you're here. That's why people listen, because so they can hear you tell us what's going on. We appreciate you. Appreciate all of that. Oh, this is a good question. Deb in Wesson says, Boysenberry, can you describe it? I've never had one.
I've seen people.
Boysenberry comes from the Citizens for Boysenberry Jam fan in a Paul Simon record. Okay, so that's the first place any of us ever heard of it, because it is a Western and slightly higher elevated fruit, and you find it in mixed berry pies, mixed berry things. It's a little bit tartar than a blackberry. But it has a real rich, very almost wine kind of taste. Excuse me. And it's a very delicious pie. But it's just one that, I don't know, it's one that I fell in love with when I was out west. And I do like a little bit sharper taste. And I think that's probably why I like sweet potato instead of pumpkin, because it has more earthy taste, you know. I like that. Interesting. Oh, this is a good one, Joe. I'm so sorry, Joe. You're not going to like my answer. But thank you anyway. Can I add to last year's tomato dirt in 5-gallon buckets anything, or do I have to change it all out? You got to change it out. 5 gallons is not enough to start with the chitin process and all that, and it's not, you don't have time to do that anyway. So get some fresh soil now and use that soil for something else. It's not that you can't grow in it, but you just can't grow tomatoes or potatoes in it. Okay. That's really the toughest thing about it, is that we have to keep that going, keep changing that. And really, if you're doing, we're not going to grow lima beans in a 5-gallon bucket, but if you have grown lima beans in the same patch, the same soil, the same piece of the bed, or it's the same row for a couple of years, you may find that there's a little bit less production there too, because that's another thing where we need to give them a little break. We need to rotate them around in order for them to function more properly. I think that's important to know. You know what else happened? This St. Patrick's Day is Monday. Now, for those of you who have never had the opportunity to see rivers flow green, for me, of course, because I'm just a nerd, the most fun for me is watching them actually turn the space green. So I've already been watching the boats in Chicago this weekend.
Everybody has like a little thing of food coloring.
It's some pretty good. You know how sometimes you'll see boats in the harbor of places, and there'll be water shooting out of them that they're doing to reduce ballast, or they're, you know, whatever they're doing.
Tugboats do that,
and that's what they'll do. And this is how they put the green in.
Oh, really? See, I never noticed any of the how-to. I've noticed that it was green.
Yeah,
they do that. Is it Chicago and Savannah? Yeah. Are those two of the big cities that do those?
Yeah,
the Green River.
And of course,
it's
you can get green beer most places.
Yeah.
It's also a holiday when people seem to want to outdo each other drinking Guinness and other stouts. I don't know exactly
Guinness.
It's fine, but I don't know why that. I don't know. I guess because it's Irish. But shillelaghs and concertinas and all those kind of things are the words that come out for St. Patrick's Day that we don't hear the rest of the time. I like a concertina. Never played one, but I like them. They're pretty cool.
Can one listener asked, can they do that to the reservoir? I bet they could. It's a lot of water, but you could surely do
How
that.
How much money do you have?
Yeah, sure they could if
exactly.
money was no object.
If we have a donation, we probably could do that.
Alligators would probably like that, too. Then they would be even more camouflage.
And, yes, it's all food color. It all washes away in a hurry. But If you've never had the opportunity to watch people drink green beer and be surprised that it still just tastes like beer, bartending is a fun occupation.
Oh, it is. You can really do some wow stuff.
Speaking of green, I'm looking at the bay leaves on my tree. I put those up today on supertalk.tv too, because they have really made it through the winter so far beautifully. This was certainly not the winter that hurt them like 2 or 3 years ago. But I never did bring it in the house. I thought I was going to have to eventually drag that thing in, but I didn't. And the good news is that it's got brand new growth on it. The old growth has stayed on very solidly. Maybe I lost a handful of potential bay leaf to eat, but not very much. This is Laurus nobilis. This is the middle range. This is the Goldilocks to me of bay leaves. And it's also the one that's the most simple to grow in a container. You know, if you live somewhere that you can really cultivate these things, that's different. But most of us, one plant's going to take care of everything that we would ever need to cook with.
A tree of it is a lifetime supply.
Yes, it is.
If you have one of those, what is it best to go on and harvest a certain portion and dry it and do whatever you would do?
People do different things. I like the taste of fresh laurel, but the other ones I don't. The other ones I prefer dry. The California Bay and the Red Bay are both a little too sharp for me. I like them dry because they have a darker flavor, and I like that. But the laurus that we grow here as a container shrub mostly, you can grow it in the ground, but, you know, it's going to take a hit every 5 years or so. So you have to be prepared for that. But I really have enjoyed watching it recover from that terrible winter that it had and the terrible drought year that both happened at the same time. And I'm here to tell you they'll come back. They're not as wimpy as you might think. So that's a good thing. Let's see. See, wouldn't that be fun? Green, absolutely for the parades and all that. I agree with you, Ray. That's really smart. If the powers would be, we end up developing the Pearl River through the capital city, it would be a beautiful one to turn green. It would. That would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun. There's instead of the yellow brick road.
Pollen road.
It's the yellow pollen road. Mine is pine pollen today, and it didn't rain at all at my house last night. So today I'm kind of traveling in a green haze, which you can hear in my throat as well as my ears and all over my car. It's one of those things.
If you haven't had the croup yet, you may get it.
You might.
The yellow stuff, though, it's interesting. Once you get a good rain, all of the stuff that actually you see that was covered with it, that when it pools up in the dog bowl and this and that, how much there actually is. It's almost like a supplement powder that you.
It's wicked. When it doesn't rain.
Coming off your car.
Yeah.
In the rain, it's just like yellow milk coming off of it. It's amazing that we can breathe as well as we do here.
Sometimes we can't. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we can't. Ken is carrying around this cute little plant that he has repotted. And, it's probably a philodendron of some sort. He's asking me about that. Keep the soil moist but not wet. Keep the thing in light but not sun. And that's really about, you know, when you repot something like that, you're going to go up just a little bit. You're not going to repot a whole lot unless you wait too long and then the roots break the pot and then may have to go a little bit larger just to accommodate it. Because sometimes these things can grow very quickly. Really nice picture of celery from Mark from Peaches this morning. He can grow celery better than anybody, and that's really cool. That's not an easy thing to grow. It's a good one. Paula's got advice for us. Double up on the allergy medicine.
Yeah.
I can't do that, Paula. I'll fall asleep while I'm driving.
Get the stuff that says non-drowsy.
Yeah, that's a joke. For some of us.
I can fall asleep on that stuff in no time.
For some of us. That's a joke for some of us. It's true. Pretty plant, though, Ken. Really pretty little philodendron. I like that. Today is also something that you may or may not want to think about. Believe it or not, it's getting to be time to plant zinnias.
Ah, what, already?
Yes, that's right. Why do we, that's really the question, isn't it? Why do we like zinnias so much anyway? Is it because they're just so happy? Is it because they're easy to grow? Is it, and for people who can't grow them, of course, they'll be saying, well, they're not easy to grow to me. Well, I'm just going to tell you that there are at least 20 different kinds, maybe more, of zinnias, and one of them will suit your growing habits. So if you have had difficulty growing them, let me begin with the narrow leaf zinnia, all right? Zinnia marylandica, just like Maryland, the state, it's zinnia marylandica is the narrow leaf zinnia. All zinnias are native to Mexico, so it's not that it grows differently, but it has a different shape leaf and a slightly different habit in that it will reseed itself more readily sometimes than the fancier cousins will. And it's also excellent for filling a pot with lots of little flowers or filling the front of a bed with a clump of zinnias that are just small. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant. That's the easiest one to grow. If you're having trouble growing zinnias, go get you a narrow leaf zinnia plant from the garden center and you'll know pretty soon that you did just fine with it. But there are so many others. We talk about growing zinnias because we love them, and we also talk about them because they're such a great cut flower. There are some things we need to understand, though, that really the different sorts don't grow differently, but they will take up different amounts of space in your garden. The standard zinnias, the dahlia-flowered zinnias that we look at, and yes, they're the ones that you think of as Pacific Giant or Benary's Giant, they're going to be 3 feet tall. And you need to accommodate that in your planting area because every kind of zinnia has the tendency to get leaf diseases if they are not properly spaced. And zinnias really are probably our most popular cut flower to just grow to enjoy in the garden. Whether or not you're going to ever sell any, it doesn't matter. You're going to enjoy them. So you want those stems to be nice and stiff, and you want the leaves to look nice, too. It's important to understand the biggest piece of that is keeping the space between the plants to where you can actually take care of it that way, okay? There's several other things I want to say about that, and I will eventually.
Mike called and asked, when growing zinnias, what is the ideal depth in which you would like to plant them if seedlings?
If you have seedlings or seeds?
Well, seeds. Not seeds, sprouts. But yeah,
if you have seeds, you're going to want to go maybe a half inch, no deeper. What you're trying to do is let them start their roots and just have a very small amount of stem to send up before they have to get out into the air. It's not something that if you plant them too shallow, they'll actually just pop up and fall over. So you have to give them a little bit of space, and that's probably the easiest way to do that.
One question personally from mm-hmm. zinnia growing, once they start getting real tall, is there a way outside of, say, wiring them against a post or because I had some that grew really, really tall mm-hmm. and they started, you know, want to tump over and mm-hmm. but they were beautiful, probably mm-hmm. the prettiest ones I've ever grown and very thick and heavy at the top. Is there some way to prevent that from happening as they grow?
Well,
can you
yes,
build the base up a little?
Sometimes we do have to take, for example, I mean, it might be as simple as the bottom part, or rather the top part of a tomato cage, and actually hold the space, you know, around the plant so that they can hold each other up. That happens when they're not quite spaced far enough apart for each one to have integrity, but it also happens when we give them too much nitrogen because they're happy and they grow too fast and too tall.
These were kind of
clumped when I did it.
So they would probably, mm-hmm. one of the problems would have been they were too close together.
Probably.
When planting. They didn't
mm-hmm.
have enough room.
But even
really,
when you run into that, mm-hmm. you can certainly tie them up.
And that's what I had to do, you know, to keep them mm-hmm. from laying down. But they were beautiful. Probably, mm-hmm. you know, some of the prettiest I've ever grown mm-hmm. and seen. They're almost 6 feet tall, though.
Yeah, that's a lot of nitrogen.
And the stalk was just huge, yes. I didn't really know what I was
hurt
doing.
Somebody with that.
I didn't really know what I was doing on that. But
sometimes, well, and zinnias, it's like growing. Have you ever grown Tithonia, the Mexican zinnia? Anyway, it's actually a shrub, and people don't realize what they're getting, and it ends up being 6 feet tall, and it's an orange flower as big as your head sometimes. But on the other hand, it may be smaller simply because it has more nitrogen than it needs to be able to grow. Well, y'all has won the contest for most popular regional word. But right now, y'all, we're going to let Van take us out of here. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Dan Edney. As state health officer, the community health workers fit in perfectly with improving the health and safety of all Mississippians. To help us improve access to care, navigate health care systems, and to help overcome social determinants of health, what I would say to legislators is community health workers extend our ability to serve the people of Mississippi. They indeed are the heart of the community.
Learn more at msdh.ms.gov/supportourchws.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
At what?
We may as well. What do you say?
Do a little rain dance.
Mm-hmm.
See if it works.
Today would be a good day to demonstrate your prowess at that,
exactly.
I think. Have a good time. Interesting. Y'all have got some great stuff. I can give my 15-pound dog a single Benadryl and cheese for allergies, no problem. I do the same at 185 pounds minus the cheese, and I'm out like a light. I'm with you. Thank you, Earl. Me too. They look at me and say Benadryl, and I go to sleep. Always been like that. Isn't that terrible? Yeah, the other ones that they say are non-drowsy are a little better, but not much. Not much.
I mean, I can fall asleep after a pot of coffee, so.
They call that a coffee nap, you know. That
I
is
can,
a thing.
Yes.
We're still not sure why that's true, but it is. So. There you have it. I love this. Ray tells us that his I think it's his son-in-law that grows the celery, takes the end of the celery and plants the foot end of it, and that it will often root, and it will. That's where you also want to take that and put food coloring in it, so when it sprouts, the sprouts are like blue, you know, and you can impress your children.
Well, I saw, obviously, a spell check. It said salary. And so I really,
I
try not to open them before you do, but I saw that and I'm like, man, I need to know how to grow my salary.
We all need to know how to grow that.
I dug in quick.
We all need to figure that one out. The Green Rivers, I love that. Yeah, I need to mention this. Somebody spoke to me in the parking lot. I get some of my best questions in the parking lot at the grocery store. Hey. What is this? How come this and that and the other thing? In this particular case, it was, why has my forsythia looked better than any other year in its life? It's like 15-year-old shrub. They have yellow bells on them, you know, and they don't bloom that great all the time. Sometimes they do. But I had to advise this person to look at the bottom of the shrub, because sometimes when flowering shrubs do beautifully, it's because they have a split at their bottom and it's actually their last gasp. So when we've had weather, for example, the age of a shrub makes a difference in the way it reacts to weather, but it's not always the young ones that suffer. Sometimes it can be an older one that you don't realize got drought stricken, and then suddenly the weather got cold. The next thing you know, unfortunately, those cells have ruptured at the base of the, you know, at the base of the plant. So when you go to do a split search on shrubs, you literally just have to move everything away and get to where you can see the base where the actual stem comes out of the ground. And if it's cracked, if it's broken, if it has crevices running up it, the chances are real good you're going to have to replace that shrub. And I don't want to be – I'm not as – There are horticulturists who would say to you, yank it out immediately, it's dead. And I know you're going to do what you want to do, but the chances are better than not that you will need to recover it with – you'll need to get rid of it and replace it. It just doesn't – they don't recover from that particular problem. It's kind of like, you know, you get the – people send me photographs of these trees, and I just wonder if you didn't look at it the last 5 years or if you just got there. I mean, sometimes people tell me the whole story and sometimes they don't. But there's a hole in the side of the tree, and the tree is 4 feet from the garage. Well, that's a dangerous situation. That's when you need to have an arborist come out and talk to you about what you need to do and how much it's going to cost because – the tree is probably going to fall over on you. So that's something you need to take care of and be a little bit attentive to. And something else that you can be fertilizing right after this next patch of rain are your ground covers. If you have liriope or ajuga or even vinca and Asiatic jasmine that you're trying to encourage in an area, springtime is really the best to fertilize them because you're more likely, frankly, to get some regular rain to work it in. But it's also the time that the plant's trying to grow. It's coming out of winter dormancy and moving into an opportunity to get more leaves, maybe even flowers. And in this case, that's what you're there to assist with that particular effort. And I hope that you will. It's real important for us to know when to do things, but it's also important to know why we're doing them. I looked up this week and saw that there's a ornamental grass that I still haven't cut down. Wonder why. I looked the other way. That's why. So I've decided I'm just going to leave it, and that will let me show you a picture in a few months of how awful it is if you don't cut down your ornamental grass. It's not where anybody else is going to notice it particularly, so I can leave it as an experimental exhibit to take photos of. But right now, it looks really sad. It's got all those brown, you know, serious amounts of brown leafage because I never cut any of that off. The whole clump is still full. And there are flowers from it that didn't get cut off, and they're kind of hanging out at odd. It's like a broken antenna. You know, they're hanging out at odd angles from the plant. And then there's green in the middle. Uh-oh. Should have been, there should only be the green in the middle. I should have gotten rid of all the rest of that, but I didn't. So we'll see what happens, and I will show you pictures as time goes by. We were talking about how to keep from having to water annual plants every day in really hot weather. And I said one of the ways to do that was to have a bulkier potting soil. What I actually mean by that is if you take a bag of good potting mix of one, any sort at all, and then use that bag to measure half a bag of pretty small, about half-inch ground pine bark, and then some kind of composted manure, either your own or a product that you purchase. Mix those things in, maybe put in some lime if you are concerned about the pH of this whole mix, you know, if you're trying to grow something that needs that particular concern, and then just a little bit of organic fertilizer to kick the whole thing off. I like a little cottonseed meal or just really whatever I have sitting around. But just put that in so that then the micro and macro life can all get busy, and when you put the plants in, then you have the perfect situation for the soil food web to start. And everybody can grow and be happy. If we're not doing a better soil and we're doing a pot that's too small, yeah, the annuals are going to dry out every day and it's going to be real frustrating. The soil mix that they come in from the greenhouse that you'll buy them in the garden center, for example, when you buy that 3-inch or 4-inch pot, that's intended to be and is in the greenhouse watered sometimes twice a day, sometimes with fertilizer every time because they're trying to grow a plant in an efficient amount of time that can get to you and still be a lovely plant ready to grow, excuse me, and won't cost a fortune because it took up greenhouse bench time too long. So those soils are going to be very, very light, and you may want to mix them into your soil that you're making for it in the larger pot, But you definitely want to understand that that would have to be watered every day, if not twice. So that was a good question. I appreciate having that to talk about today. It's important. Ray, let me give you a clue. Everybody uses audio talking into their texts, and I will convince you. I will tell you right now, you do not have to worry about it because we all read around them anyway. You know those things where it says if you can read this, and it's actually written backwards. We've learned over the years that we have to know how to do that because there are so many autocorrects and so many microphone programs that don't listen and don't hear. Peaches the other day was writing something to me, and I couldn't understand a word of it. And I'm sure he was speaking clearly because he dictates into his machine while he's in the car.
Mine gets worse. Over the many years I've had this phone, it actually gets worse than it was. I don't know what I've done to it, but I think I fried its AI.
I have to be careful about that. 6 years and no blooms. Yeah, I probably need to dig it up and separate those bulbs. But I'm just crazy mama, and I'll be back.
Homeowners, Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from 3 licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Think for...
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome in. Oh my goodness, this is an important day, my friends. Ever since 44, yes, that's right, 44 BCE, this has been the Ides of March. Now, nobody called it that until Shakespeare, but of course this is the famous Beware the Ides of March, and the Ides is in fact the 15th, middle of the month. There are roughly, when we look at the Roman and then we look at the Gregorian and we look at all these different calendars and whatnot, Ides is generally speaking the full moon. And yes, we're right there.
It was so bright last night.
So pretty. By this morning, of course, it was kind of clouded up because we're looking at a rather raucous weather day, to put it mildly. But Ides of March is something that we now understand and recognize as something to pay attention to, simply because, of course, it was when Julius Caesar was assassinated. And it's one of those things, you know, if nobody had written it down, we probably wouldn't know when it happened. But we know because they paid attention and kept track of all that stuff. Interesting stuff. Here's something else. Gosh, there's so many interesting things going on. Thank you, Jimbo, Etu Brute. You're absolutely right. This is a great question.
And you, Brutus.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who haven't been forced to study Shakespeare and don't have any appreciation of that, Brutus is the one who stabbed him. And it is there's a whole surrounding cadre of people who came to attack Julius Caesar, and Julius would have thought that Brutus, being his best friend, was going to be the one who saved him, and of course he didn't. And so he says,
succumbed to peer pressure.
He did indeed, and he says, "Et tu, Brutus? You too, Brutus?
Brutus,
and
no."
There are those who would say that that's how come Popeye's nemesis is Bluto, because it's the same sound. You know, it's not, it isn't a translation or anything. It's just the idea of this, oh no, not my best friend, you know, kind of stuff. It is a particularly sad moment when one feels betrayed by a friend. Tough stuff. This is so fun. These are two of my very favorite questions. This is a poinsettia, Brenda says. Had it 4 or 5 years. I drag it in and out of the garage. It's about 2 feet tall, and it has leaves at the top. I'm telling you this because I'm looking at it, and it has leaves around the base of it, too. And she wants to know if it's time to prune it back and how far to make it bush out again, because it is spindly. She says that, and that's true. You can cut it down by half. You'll have some sticks standing up above the leaves that are presently in the lower part of the plant. Then you'll fertilize it. And it will, the leaves that are there will continue to grow, and you'll probably get sprouting from the top, and that will also make it a little bit stronger of a shrub. If it doesn't, you can always come in and clip off those pieces that did not leaf out. But the bottom is ready. I can tell by looking at it. It is absolutely ready to go. That's great. By the way, Randy, in case you didn't hear me coming out of the last hour, I believe that this particular daffodil is too crowded, this bulbous plant, it's probably a daffodil. If you dig it all up, you'll probably find that you've got 5 or 6 bulbs down there that could be spread out and planted a little bit less deep, and that would be two things that would recommend that you can recommend to having an opportunity for it to bloom again. Usually, that's all it takes. This is so smart. I don't even know how to say this because it's so nice. I recently visited a local nursery who must listen to your program in the North Madison area. Good morning, y'all. They had all 4 of the daisies that I recommended that you plant in succession because you'll have 2 months of daisy flowers. Nice. And they had celery plants. Thanks, y'all. Those are things that people want. People love to grow daisies. And if we understand that by planting different varieties, everybody says, why this variety or that variety? Well, because this one blooms sooner, and this one blooms a little later, and this one blooms after that, you know, and you get a chance to have a succession of flowers that keep your vases full and keep your garden looking great, too. And, of course, celery plants, because we're all interested in growing celery now. So we're all doing that. But the other question is, and this one is really, really good too. Good morning. Seed packets recommend sowing when the soil is warm. How can the average gardener easily determine when the soil is warm enough? Oh, that is such a good question. Now, it's very difficult. There's a couple of pieces of this puzzle. One is that traditionally, by the time of the last frost date, we're in soil that is not warm, not hot, but not inhospitable in most cases to the seeds that need warm soil. But just very shortly after that, we find that that's true. Now, the problem, of course, is if your soils are wet and stay wet, they do not warm as quickly as the other soils that drain better. And, yes, there are thermometers for this sort of thing. If you get really into it, you may want to find out the difference in your particular properties. You know, bare areas, if you take the temperature over here, it might be one thing, and take it over there, it's going to be something else. That might tell you a little bit about where to plant first. It's also really important, I think, to understand that if you can put your hand to the soil and it feels warm to your touch, not hot, just not cold, the chances are very good that the seeds are going to be able to grow. I'm thinking of things like beans and squash and zinnias and all the stuff that needs warm soil to germinate. If you are hesitant, if you want to speed the process up, people do this all the time, they'll cover that container or they'll cover that row with black plastic before they plant the seeds, do that, leave that there for a few weeks, and let the sun, you know, beat down through there because that heats it up, and then you know you've got warmer soil. So there's a couple of different ways to get that going for you. While we're thinking about it, let's talk about zinnias. Zinnias are probably the most popular thing planted in terms of a seed in our part of the world. Maybe beans beat them, maybe not. But when it comes to zinnias, there's so many to consider that I don't want to leave anything out. You may not like this one, you may not like that one, but you may like something else. And that's exactly how zinnias are intended to be. There are giant zinnias. They're going to be 3 and 4 feet tall. They're going to have stiff stems if you space them properly. They're going to have big flowers. And they will be sometimes single and sometimes double. That means sometimes there'll be one row of petals and you'll be able to see the center of the flower. Other times they'll be doubled with petals and you won't see the center of the flower. Sometimes in the giant zinnia world, you'll actually see some that the interior petals are shorter than the ones around the edges. They call those cupcakes because the part of them stands up. And that's kind of fun. There's also the difference between dahlia and cactus zinnias. The dahlia flowers are the ones that we think of traditionally, the double flowers with a whole lot of petals in them in all the bright colors. But cactus zinnias have a more open form. They're not single because their petals are also long and slightly different, but they just have a larger spread for the same stem size, and they will have pointy petals that are different from the ones on the simply on the dahlia shaped or dahlia flowered ones. We talk about cut and come again daisies that are cut and come again zinnias. Can I say this? My head won't work today. That are the ones that we know that if we cut them, they will put more flowers out. If you're interested in having that in the garden, make sure you look for the varieties that tell you they will cut and come again. Okay? It's important. There also are dwarf zinnias, things like thumbelina that are really pretty in pots on the porch or maybe in the front of the flower bed. They're lovely little flowers all the time. They make the cutest little tiny bouquets. You know, they're fun and lovely to have in bright, bright colors. But there's also some in within that world that are shaped like the dahlia ones, but there's some that are shaped like, frankly, that we have the literally little pom-pom ones that make several flowers on one stem. The zinnia world is just huge. Now, when we talk about the biggest zinnias, which ones we like? Well, probably Benary's Giant is the most popular. Pacific Giant used to be very, very popular. But I'm telling you, if you like unusual colors, look for the Queen series. There'll be Queen Rose, Queen Lime, different ones. They're just a little bit different. Equally large, equally easy to grow, so long as you remember sun, not too much fertilizer, and space those plants properly, you'll have zinnias. Let's look at the text line this morning. Hey, Bubba. we did hear last week at the end of the show that there would be the older Martins come back first, but I was already off the air by the time that text came through, so we didn't get to tell you that. Okay, I'll pull up the daisies here in a minute. May Queen is the first one, and Becky's the last one, but I have to get the two in the middle, so I will get that to you here in just a little bit. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that. Now watch. If Mark's not working, he'll put them in here in the text line for us, and then we'll have them permanently. I have cut back Paul the poinsettia to where he's only about 2 feet out of his container. And there's green under some of the stems, not under all of them. So I don't know if he's going to come back for me or not this particular year. I see someone has sent us for supertalk.tv pictures of extremely, extremely pollinaceous pines. We were talking in the previous hour about how everything's got a little yellow cast to it. And when it does rain, of course, the pollen will be running down the street, which we're glad because then it's not running into my nose. But it is really, they're very happy. They're very pollinaceous this time. That is for sure. And save the last zinnia cuttings to save the seeds. It's a real good idea. Most zinnias come true from seed. Not everything, but most zinnias come true from seed. Another thing that you'll see at supertalk.tv today is this really odd green and white thing sticking up out of the ground. That is actually a variegated walking iris that Mark got, and I'm going to take a piece of, from Buds and Blooms. We had so much fun last week. What a great event down there. That was just terrific. And it was a plant that both of us had been wanting, and there it was. So we're happy to see it. So happy to see it. We do love our Martins, don't we? You're absolutely right. Bubba likes that. Harvested these from last year's blooms. Do they have a chance of growing when sowed? Sure, they have a chance. There's the way to find out if they will before you put them in a pot or put them in the ground is take maybe 6 or 7, put them into a wet paper towel, roll it up, and keep it wet for a couple of days and just see if any action happens, see if they're able to. Because the first thing the seed has to do, of course, is take up water, and then it has to spit out a root. So if it can do either of those things in the paper towel, you'll know that it can do it in the ground or in your containers as well. It's a pretty bunch of seeds. I like that. Very nice. Today is Save the Florida Panther Day. Did you know we needed to do that? Well, of course you knew we needed to do that. They are endangered. They're not as endangered. They're only critically endangered. They're not like about to disappear endangered, because at one point there were 60 of them in the census in Florida, and now we're up to like 120. So in 15 years they've doubled their population. I got lost researching this story in the cat family tree. I don't know if this is even practical, but you know that finding your roots thing where they put your family tree out and it goes all the back to generations and one thing and another. People have been into genealogy. There's a couple people in my family that are into it. I want the cat family tree, because I didn't know that panthers are in the cougar branch, because I don't know anything about it. And no, this is a tan panther. I'm not going to go the other way. Y'all can say whatever you want, but this is what these are.
The Northwest Rankin Cougar is a tan one.
Yes.
Golden colored.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful creatures. Unfortunately, they need blinkers, I think, because in Florida, one of the biggest causes of their death is they get run over by vehicles. Well, that's kind of crazy. You would think they could outrun anything, and you'd think that the vehicle would see them and avoid them, but it's not possible. So, obviously, there's some genetic issues when your population gets real small that complicates the reproduction of all of that. And there's also some things that are just the habitat loss. You know, things change, and the places where they can live are more endangered. But for today, this is a day when they celebrate that particular creature in Florida, and everybody tries to go out and do things to raise money to put into the research efforts that will help maintain their habitat and also keep them in the population. Because when we lose any, particularly, I mean, this is a mammal, okay, this is a big mammal and feeds on middle-sized mammals. You may think that that's rough and tough, but the populations need to be controlled, and they all need to be in balance in order for the ecology to actually work the way we want it to. So there's a bunch of stuff. Nature Conservancy is helping with that. They've got property in Florida for that, but other ones as well. Southwest Florida is where the few are that are, and I trust that there's people out there today working on maintaining them, because today is Save the Florida Panther Day. Pretty cool. Pretty beautiful creature, by the way. If you haven't seen one, go take a look. Go take a look. Let's see. How far apart do you plant the giant zinnias, and do you think cosmos would look nice? Oh, yeah, with them? Absolutely. There's cosmos that are just as tall, and they're absolutely gorgeous with it. I want each giant zinnia plant to have 5 inches between it and the one next to it. I say that so that you will at least give it 4, and maybe you'll give it 6. We need for their leaves to not brush upon each other as closely as they generally do. And it's just one of those things that we really have to, you know, we really have to give ourselves the opportunity to get in there and thin them. It kills us to thin them, but you can maybe plant them somewhere else, because a lot of times those seedlings are quite viable. I love cosmos with zinnias. It's a beautiful change in both the flower colors and the flower type, but also the foliage itself is very different. So it's lovely. Really pretty. Arum, A-R-U-M, is the name of these. Hey, Dot, in Bolton. This is A-R-U-M, Italian arum, is the name of that bulb. And yours are gorgeous. Just lovely. Just lovely. You're so right. I tell you what, Deb and Wesson and I are on one beam today. We're talking, still talking about lichen from last week and the carving into the little wood spirits and whatnot. I thought about you today. I got to tell you, I had a whole bunch of lichen fall out of one of my trees this week, and I went, oh, Deb, we need these for the wood carvers. Anyway, did y'all see Ringo and the gang at the Ryman? Hey, now, it was fun. Y'all need to go watch it. I will be back.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden with you.
All of us at the Mississippi Propane Gas Association are committed to providing you with the best possible services and affordable values. We operate in a way that assures a safe, reliable, and economical fuel source. Our trained personnel constantly monitor the conditions of our gas systems to assure reliability and safety. Any repairs or modifications to a propane gas system must be performed by the qualified technicians of your propane provider as required by state and federal regulations.
Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish, then there is Superior Catfish.
Attention!
I love it when y'all ask me questions I don't know the answer to, and I have to think about things, fret a little bit. Here come the daisies, the succession of daisies that will bloom one after the other and can all be grown in your garden together. May Queen, that's an oxeye type. That's the only one that's a little bit different, but it's one of the cultivated native daisies, okay, oxeye. Then we go directly into Snow Lady, then Alaska, and then Becky. Okay? There they are. I love those plants. They're just great, great, great choices. Good, good question. I was gifted two blackberries. This is fun. In native soil. When do I plant them? You can plant them today. You can plant them anytime at all. I would suggest transplanting them into some soil that you may want to improve it just a little bit, but not very much. If it doesn't drain well, you want to add a little something to help it drain, that's fine. But since they're growing well in soil that is native to your area, you won't have to do very much in terms of soil prep. Then after that, I'm going to make sure to tell you that you need to keep them watered and keep them mulched, because the new growth is going to come almost immediately. It's about that time. How great. That's in Clarksdale. Good morning, Brenda. Thank you very much for writing today. Greg's blueberries look great. They're just beautiful. And as we always say, we just love our blueberries, especially when they don't freeze. This is why we're very happy that they didn't freeze. They look really good. What can I do for, let's see, this is the other one. That 20-degree weather didn't seem to hurt them. And the variety is Premier, in case y'all were wondering. That's in Vaughn. So if you're wondering on a recommended variety from local sources, that would be Premier. And they are. It is a beautiful blueberry. Really, really nice one. What can I do for these? Well, there are those who would say, mow them down. And that's kind of what it is. This is a bed of cast iron plant. If I had to guess what happened to this, I would bet that there used to be a tree between this and the sun. And the tree fell down or had to be removed or got cut down or whatever, because this is a bed of cast iron plant that is clearly way shredded. They're browned. They're, in some cases, the leaves are split, and they're all too pale. So the thing to do for this, and it doesn't really matter if it's in sun or shade, to grow them, they will grow in shade. That's why we usually do, because we have so few things that will grow to be 3 feet tall and stay green all the time in a shady spot. But the cast iron plant will do that. Aspidistra, though, is perfectly capable of growing in sun. You just have to keep it watered and fertilized in order for that to work. So what you do for these right now is you cut them down to their stems. You cut them down to where they're like 2 or 3 inches off the ground. Fertilize the whole bed and basically jump back. I pull out the rest of the weeds, too, that are in there. Well, I presume they're weeds because they don't look like they belong in that planting. But that's really the way to handle them. And if you want to get rid of them altogether, this is an excellent time to dig them up by the shovelful and give them to some unsuspecting, neighbor that wants something in the shade because you don't have the shade anymore. But they can definitely be salvaged, and I wish that more people would. After a very, very bad winter, they look terrible even when they're in the shade and doing pretty well. But they really do need to be cut back every few years just to thicken their stand. And they are a plant that is really, really beautiful and really easy to grow. But it's also one that when it gets raggy, it doesn't get better by itself. That's for sure. Another plant that has been at supertalk.tv this morning, I've been showing you the calendula. Calendula is a flower that's in bloom right now. It's an overwintering annual. It's not as tough as, I'm just going to start saying this, it's not as tough as Tupelo, but it's a good plant. And if you were growing it in Tupelo, you would be growing it in a container that you protected, because it is, the flowers get really messy if they get frozen. But it's a plant particularly for anywhere from there south. We grow a lot of calendulas. This is the one called French Marigold. It is not a French Marigold, and it smells terrible to some people, but those of us who like it really like it. It's going to be about a 6-inch tall plant with a flower on it, maybe a little bigger than a Gerber daisy, but a much more daisy-looking flower in different colors. It's a really pretty thing and something that I wish that you would enjoy and appreciate. I'm not going to talk about ladybugs and lady beetles today, but you will see one slide at supertalk.tv today of the difference. And so we'll get into that another day when we have time to talk about them. The ladybugs, obviously, are our friends. The lady beetles can be a bit more problematic. They're all subject to being vacuumed up and taken out of the house, however. And if you can cultivate ladybugs, as I have in your garden, you really, the world's full of aphids. They get plenty to eat. I don't have to feed them, and I don't have to try to control the aphids because the ladybugs take care of that work all the way for me. It works out very, very well. Something else in bloom right now is my friend, the sweet olive. And this morning I noticed that there were some brand new flowers probably going to open right after the weather this weekend. I love that plant. It's a tree that everybody should have, whether it's in a container because you think it's, it's pretty up close and you want to hold it by the window, or as a tree out in the yard. It's a lovely, lovely one. Let's see. I've been told not to plant or put a planting bed under a live oak tree. Is that true? Cast iron plant will be all right? Yes, cast iron plant will be okay. The reason people tell you that is because, the one you can't plant flowers or anything underneath are walnuts. Black walnuts, without going into a bunch of botanical hoo-ha for you, but they do secrete a substance that kills other plants in their vicinity, kills a lot of other plants in their vicinity. Oak trees don't do that. Oak trees, however, because they're shallow-rooted, especially like the live oaks, you can have a competition situation, and people also plant them, and then they put the bed right around the base of the tree so that as the tree grows, the whole thing competes with each other, and frankly, it looks funny anyway. It looks like this little tiny bed and this giant tree sticking out the top of it, so that doesn't work. But if you start with the right intention and come out 6 feet or so from where you're planting this young tree, or come out 6 feet from an existing tree, you can generally make at least some portion of a flower bed that will not interrupt the tree and will not cause trouble and still have enough light for the plants you want to grow. I have been all my life a big fan of when you have established trees and you go into a garden, you can take, for instance, iris corms and plant them in between the actual roots because they need that great drainage for bearded iris and things like that, tictorum, some of those other ones. But they're really easy to grow that way. So that's another thing that you can do in that space under the tree is actually nestle things up in the roots if you have the opportunity to do that. I'm not glad to tell you, but I will, that we have a continuing problem with our birds. Cornell University, you know, does the backyard bird count every year. And this particular year, the 2025 State of the Birds report in the United States, which comes from Cornell, but everybody else, too, that does all of this, continuing widespread declines in American bird populations in both mainland and marine habitats. That's not good. There are almost more than 200 species that require urgent attention if we are going to keep from losing them. This is not foolishness. This is, you know, the canary in the coal mine is a real thing. Birds are impacted by dangers in the environment before people are in many cases. And in this case, we need to understand that they're being impacted and we need to pay attention. There are 42 red alert species included in there. Let me try again. There's 112 or so tipping point species, and there are 42 that are red alert, which is even worse. Allen's hummingbird, the tricolored blackbird, and the salt marsh sparrow that are at risk, facing perilously low populations, and really are going to be very difficult to keep because they have lost well more than 50% of their population in the last 50 years. That's the rule of losing and calling it a tipping point. And so it's the ones that are even worse don't even have that many left. So pay attention. Feed the birds. Yes, sir.
We have Anna in Oxford. She wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the garden with this huge storm coming.
Okie dokie. Hello, Anna. Thank you for calling today.
Hi. How are you?
I don't have on my rain boots yet, but I think I'm going to need them.
Well, it's not raining now, and we didn't have that much rain, but there's a lot of thunder going through, so we may get lost. Why is it my deciduous magnolia knows it's going to rain, so it blooms?
Good timing, unfortunate timing.
Every year. Yeah, every year, and then I see all the petals on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to let you know that my Edwardsia, you know, paper bush, got through the winter.
Oh, that's wonderful. Love that plant.
And I still have some little flowers, and now I'm getting some green leaves.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I thought I would challenge the weather, and I put out some sweet pea seeds.
Mm-hmm.
That's the flower, not the eating one.
Yeah.
And I've got action.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Someone sent me a picture yesterday. His tuberoses have just sprouted. And he said, yay, I made it. They came up before they got buried, you know. And I think that's wonderful. And sweet peas in Oxford particularly, y'all have just enough extra springtime that they should be able to bloom without any problem.
I hope so, because this is the first time I've actually had action. One of my master gardeners, she gets sweet peas, and I'm thinking, you know, it was my grandfather's favorite flower, so why can't I grow them? but I hope I get some blooms. And also, the weather, it hasn't been that much rain. I mean, we were petrified. We're thinking, you know, all these warnings going through.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be wiped out or whatever. But so far, keep my fingers crossed, we haven't had, you know, something major.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that we're able to talk this morning, and I trust that the rest of the day will be equally safe for you. We'll cross our fingers.
I'm hoping that everything will come up just fine. Irises are up. Daffodils have been ruined with the little rain we had. But we got more to come up, so that's going to be helpful. And the evergreens seem to be doing fine.
Good.
But one year, I had a fig tree, and because I heard you talking about it in the last hour, what was the evergreen leaf that you put in stews? I can't
think. Bay leaf.
Mm-hmm. Bay leaf. And I had a lovely bay leaf tree,
mm-hmm.
and they were in the same plot. Then we had one of those cold rains, and then I guess it got really cold, and everything died.
Ah.
So I have a dwarf fig in a pot, and I got a small bay leaf, which I bring in and put out.
Whatever. Oh, yeah.
And I'm hoping that I can find the right place to put them, because it doesn't get that cold.
Well, and it's a short period of time. So if things are not overly, you know, overly rapidly growing, sometimes they can take that, because it isn't a very long dip. And I think that's how you garden, is you don't feed things that are likely to be frozen in a minute. You know, you'll wait until like now, and then you move into the springtime, you fertilize things, but you don't have to do it. We have so many people that just see a bag of fertilizer and feel like they have to throw it on something. But if you realize that you want concerted and thrifty growth, you don't want necessarily fast growth all the time, I think that works out.
I'm very slow to fertilize, mm-hmm. but I did throw out a little lime, because I've got a lot of moss, particularly in my raised bed.
Mm-hmm. That's a good counter for the moss. We go back to some people want it, some people don't want it, but lime is the answer if you don't. So.
Because I've got peonies there, and peonies don't
They don't like acid soil at all. That's
there.
True. That's true.
One more question. Do daylilies need lime, or do they not?
Well, they're not a particularly acid-loving plant, so I would say if you're making a daylily bed, you would want to put lime in it, and you might want to lime the bed, because you're going to work daily beds every 5 years anyway, if not every three. And at that point, probably put in a little bit of lime. It's another case where it takes a number of months for it to begin working, so it's not an instant thing to happen. But it will contribute to keeping that bed from becoming too acid over time. And daylilies don't like that too much.
Oh, shucks. I put it in the other day thinking the rain would wash it in.
Well, that'll get it into the soil. It just takes a while for it to get to work.
Yeah.
Like so many things. It takes a while.
Great talking to you.
Thank you, ma'am. Good to hear from you today. Y'all take care. Batten down those hatches. There is a breeze, and we heard a few little raindrops a minute ago. Now, I'm so happy to tell y'all 32 regional words, one bracket. Mm-hmm. That's right. You know March Madness. In this case, it's the best regional word from dictionary.com, and y'all won. That's us. We y'all won. Let's see what other kind of trouble we can get into right after this.
No. Ain't no change in the weather. Ain't no change in me. Ain't no change in the weather.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical trade and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time.
If you're feeling anxious,
you have to be careful how you have fun in this world. But once you establish that parameter, I say cut loose. Mama told me not to come. Come on, she didn't do that. She told you to be careful when you got there. But she didn't tell you not to go. She said, be careful. That's what mamas do. They can't help it. Listen now, University of Texas at Austin is doing something that we want. Wouldn't we like to get drinking water out of thin air? Wouldn't that change a lot of things? I mean, come on, that would really make a big difference. What they're working on there, they've got a new system that can pull the drinking water out of an assortment of things. Old food scraps, branches, seashells, and a lot of other natural materials, because they all do have water in them. And if they can't be composted in some other fashion, why in the world wouldn't you want to do something else with them that would be practical and useful? And in this case, yes, indeed, making water would be it. But I have to give this to you. We've talked about hydrogels for a long time in gardening. They're those little polymers that are full of water, quote unquote, that are in potting soil. They can keep you from having to water every single day if they work. And at the same time, if they work too well, you can end up with plants that get too wet and stay that way. So it's a polymer. It's a careful thing to be paid attention to in gardening. Probably going to be this way too. Some are going to work and some are not. I love this. Molecularly functionalized biomass hydrogels. And that's in quotes. That's an absolute term for this. It you know, MFBF, BH doesn't really help us at all in terms of an acronym. So we're just going to go this, we're going to call this the Austin system. But it converts natural products into sorbents, which are materials that can absorb liquids. Combining those things with just a little bit of heat, the researchers harvest gallons of drinkable water out of the atmosphere, even when the atmosphere is dry. Now, come on. That's just brilliant. We're talking stuff that can change the world. Ooh, speaking of peonies, I had to move peonies last year. It has small buds. How should I fertilize and what should I use? If you haven't fertilized it at all yet, I would use a little bit of flower fertilizer on it now, but maybe a half dose. And then after the flowers do bloom, because congratulations, you got them to transplant and put on buds. Then after that, you probably want to fertilize them another half in order to get them to actually grow through the summer and get to be bigger next year. But it's a difficult plant to move, difficult plant to grow in many cases. And my hat's off. Congratulations. That's wonderful. Peonies are so pretty. Or peonies, as my grandmother would say. Lovely, lovely, lovely. There are, guess what else there is today? Oh my goodness, this is a crazy day. It's Peanut Lover's Day, so if y'all are interested in some pad thai or something, you can go ahead and do that.
Or you drive over to West Georgia.
Or you can, you know, take a quick jaunt. I would rather go here, because here we do more than 50 million pounds annually.
It's amazing how much.
We're number 10 in production, and frankly, our peanuts are better.
They're delicious. the little packets that you get from the ag department.
Exactly. Oh. They're just wonderful. If you've not had any, if you've not looked at Mississippi peanuts, pay attention, because it's really cool.
You can get anything.
A few years ago. Oh, yeah. We can grow everything here. We can grow everything here, and better than just about any place else. I think there's more than 110 peanut farms, but I do know that it's 12 or 14,000 acres of peanuts. Doesn't sound like a lot. It's a lot more than most people can grow. And they're not the easiest thing in the world for a farmer to grow either. So my hat's off to them. Chris in Forest County, when do I fertilize my apple trees? About a minute ago. Have they bloomed? I'm sure they've bloomed. And if you haven't fertilized them yet, you need to go ahead and do that. Ordinarily, we would prune in January and wait a week or two, depending on the weather, and then fertilize. But it's fine to go ahead and do that now. I have no problem with that. I'm glad to know that you're growing apple trees. There's several varieties, of course, that will grow in zone 8B and even 9A. And I love to see when y'all do that. That's great. That's funny. Wonder what, do you use a fruit tree food or do you use something else? Well, you can use either one. If you don't have anything, certainly get a fruit tree food. But if you have some other fertilizer that's for flowering shrubs or flowering trees and plants, it will more than likely have what you need in it. Just read your labels and you'll know for sure. Today is Maple Syrup Saturday. Now, that doesn't go with corn dogs or peanuts. Sometimes we can put these things together into a cuisine, but today we can't, so I've just sort of strung them across the morning. Here in America, we make about 4 million gallons. Half of that's in Vermont. I think the other half's in Michigan, actually, but somewhere between there and Michigan anyway. It's where most of that happens. But we import, good heavens, this is ridiculous, 40 million kilograms, which is 40, the kilograms, 1,000 tons, 1,000, you know, so it's a whole lot of tons of maple syrup. There are, I just recently discovered one that has alcohol in it. It was very interesting. I'm a cane syrup girl. I grew up on it, and everything else tastes kind of funny to me. But I appreciate maple syrup, and I appreciate that there are people that love it more than anything else in the world as a syrup. So I'm not putting it down, but I will tell you that it's we don't do near as much of it here as they do in Canada. That's for sure. Although I will give you that. I'll give you that they can do that better than us. Did you know that we have another problem? Just leave you with one problem to contemplate. AI and the counting of toes and fingers, you know, you always look because you can tell it's AI because they have six toes, or they have, you know, they don't do hands and feet very well in that particular programming world yet. Well, they don't do clocks very well either, it turns out. They don't all look like Dolly. They're not all folded over the, you know, the edge of something and falling off. But you will find sometimes more than not, apparently, that the AI-generated timepieces, whether they're on a person's arm or on a wall, will be backwards from what real time would be. So it can be kind of confusing, but it's also a tip-off if you're trying to figure out whether or not something is using AI. It's an interesting way to look at it. I'm happy to tell you, though, that although our changing temperatures and warming situations are threatening the banana crop, it's not bad enough that we've got too much Cavendish. We have to find one that's going to be able to grow in warmer conditions. And because we have, it's $11 billion in bananas. Did you know that? Good grief. Anyway, the good news is that amphibians are bouncing back. They're something that we had lower numbers in, and now we've got bigger numbers. And we rediscovered a frog species that we hadn't seen in more than 100 years. I think that's pretty cool. This is just something that they didn't realize they could still find. It's important for South American herpetology and for the conservation in the southern zone. Friends of mine are in Chile right now. Looks beautiful. Looks real gray. Most of their pictures are out whale watching and whatnot. But it does look beautiful. And I'm glad to know that they have rediscovered the ancient Hacienda San Ignacio de Pumejo Lacan in the region in Chile. That sounds like a nice place. Let's go, okay? What do you think? We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, I think we're going to go look at some frogs in Chile and maybe count some fingers and toes. Y'all have a great week. See you then.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Prom season. From promposals to finding the perfect dress and choosing a stylish tux, teens all across our state are making big plans. That's why the Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services and the Mississippi Highway Patrol are reminding students to have a safe and memorable prom by making smart choices behind the wheel. Don't drink and drive, don't text and drive, and do buckle up. Your school, family, and friends want you to please return on Monday in the same condition you left. Your choices today impact your tomorrow.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Attention!
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.